I do count it a great blessing and privilege to be with you in service this morning. I have, over the past month or two or three, thought a lot about the subject of the sovereignty of God. And the reason that I've thought about it, I believe, is because it seems to come up so much in conversation. When you boil the problem that most folks have with election or predestination or grace, free grace down, really what the heart of the issue is, man that we talk to just don't like to hear about the sovereignty of God. Because we live in an era today in which man thinks he's in charge, man thinks he's in control, or at least he wants to be. And he doesn't like being told that there's things that he can't do for himself, that he didn't have any say-so in. And he doesn't like being told that God can do whatever he wants and doesn't ask his opinion about things. Man just doesn't like that anymore. But the Lord has a way sometimes of showing us His power, His authority, and bringing us down by removing the things that are important from us in our lives, and has a way of showing us more clearly who He really is. Now, this morning, I'd like to look at the experience of a man who I'm sure is familiar to all of us, but even if you may have not had experiences just like this man had some extraordinary experiences. But these extraordinary experiences also show us that in our ordinary lives, these same things can happen. The man in question is a man named Nebuchadnezzar. And I'd like to look at three things that Nebuchadnezzar says. One of them is found at the end of Daniel 2. The other one's found at the end of Daniel 3. And the last one's found at the end of Daniel 4. In Daniel chapter 2, let's start reading in verse 46. Daniel 2 and 46. Then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, Of a truth it is that thy God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets. Seeing thou couldest reveal this secret, then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. And Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. Now, I'm going to just briefly try to go through the backstory of this. The backstory of this is that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream one night, and the dream troubled him, and he wanted his wise men, he wanted his magicians, he wanted his soothsayers to give him the interpretation of the dream. And they said, okay, well, tell us what you dreamed, and we'll give you the interpretation of it. And Nebuchadnezzar says, I can't remember what I dreamed. So you tell me what I dreamed, and then you give me the interpretation of it. Now, when I used to read this, I used to think that was kind of unreasonable. But then I got to thinking, you know, some man has been gifted with the ability to reveal the meaning of a dream to somebody else. It's not a great thing to be gifted with the ability to reveal what the man actually dreamed too. It takes the same power to do one as it does the other. But then when the magicians say, King, this is unreasonable. There's not a man on the earth that's able to do this. And what does he say? He says, You would gain the time if I were to tell you what I dream. What he's basically saying is, you might have nothing, but if I give you the dream, you could probably come up with something that's worth listening to. You know, a man can give you, if you give him enough information, he can come up with anything worth listening to. So the king says, if you tell me what I dream, and then give me the interpretation, then I'll be convinced that you really know the answer. Well, nobody can. So the king makes a hasty decree that all the wise men, all the magicians, all the soothsayers, everybody in the kingdom that's in what we would call academic circles, they would all be put to death. When Daniel hears what the king has done, Daniel says, I'll go and reveal the king's dream to him. And then Daniel does something very important. He tells his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his brethren, pray for me. That's good advice. That's a good counsel for us today. Brethren, pray for me. And Daniel goes into the king, and Daniel gives the king his dream. He says, O king, thou sawest an image in thy dream with a head of gold, arms and chest of silver, loins of brass, legs of iron, and feet that have iron mixed with clay. And as thou beheld that vision, as thou beheld that image, behold, a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. And it came and struck that image down at its feet and destroyed it into pieces, and that stone became a great mountain that filled all the earth. And then Daniel begins to reveal this dream to the king, that Nebuchadnezzar was the head of gold, and after him would be a kingdom inferior to him, the Medes and the Persians that had arms and chests of silver. Then after them would arise the Greeks under Alexander the Dead. You know him as Alexander the Great, but he's not great anymore, he's dead. And Alexander the Dead and his Grecian empire would be the loins of brass. Last of all, Rome and its strength would be the legs of iron. And then finally, in the days of Christ, Rome had begun to crumble and had feet of iron mixed with clay. And Christ is a stone cut out of the mountain without hands that destroys all the other earthly kingdoms. And His kingdom is a kingdom that fills all the earth, made without hands, and the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion. And when Daniel reveals this dream to the king, he's telling him of things that are going on right now, of things yet to come. And when Nebuchadnezzar hears it, he says, I know of a truth, that this man Daniel had this thing revealed to him. Now notice what Nebuchadnezzar does. Nebuchadnezzar gives a statement that sounds pretty good in some places, but his statement shows that he does not yet fully understand who God is and how God works, nor how to honor God as he should. What does Nebuchadnezzar say? Well, the first thing he does is he bows down and worships Daniel. And that ought not be done because the messenger is not worthy of being worshipped. The God who sent the messenger is worthy of being worshipped. And if you don't hear anything else I say after this, remember this. The best message you've ever heard means nothing without the one who gave the messenger the message. If you have a message that's been given to you personally that you rejoice in, you thank God for the message. Forget about who delivered it to you. So he bows down and he worships Daniel. Shows he doesn't understand how true worship is. Shows he doesn't have a proper understanding of God. And what does he say about God? He says, of a truth, the God that Daniel serves is a Lord of kings. He is the God of gods. He is the revealer of secrets. What Nebuchadnezzar's done is he says, Daniel, I didn't know anything about your God, but I admit He exists. He has to. He gave you the revelation. He gave you the understanding. But what has Nebuchadnezzar not done? He's not turned loose of his own ideas of his own gods. He says, well, you have a God, and He is the Lord of kings. He is the God of gods. He is the revealer of secrets. And friends, there are many today that will admit to the existence of God. Why do they admit to the existence of God? Because miraculous things happen in their lives. They find miracles that occur all over the place, and they say, surely God exists. But what are they not willing to do? They're not willing to let loose of their own gods, of their own idols, of their own persuasions, of their own thinking. Nebuchadnezzar says, yes, I admit you have a God, but I've got mine too. He has not yet turned loose of his own idols, of his own thinking. Now let's go over another chapter. I'll try to bring all this together at the very end. In the next chapter, before I read what Nebuchadnezzar says, let's get the backstory. As chapter 3 opens, Nebuchadnezzar has an idol of gold that he sets up. An idol that is 90 feet tall. It's a pretty big idol. And he commands that whenever the people hear all forms of music, that they bow down and worship the idol that he set up. Now, when this happens, three men who are known by Nebuchadnezzar as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I choose to call them Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. If you want to know, we'll talk about it later. But these three men, these three Hebrew men, do not bow down to the image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. When Nebuchadnezzar finds out about it, he becomes mad. He calls them unto them. He says, why have you not bowed down to the image that I have given and I have set up? And they basically tell him this. Our God whom we serve is not a God like you have, and our God whom we serve is able to deliver us out of the burning fiery furnace, and our God will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Nebuchadnezzar is so mad at them because they are defiant in the face of the king that he commands this furnace, this punishment, that if someone didn't bow down to his idol, he says, heat it seven times hotter than normal. And the king's commandment was so fierce, it was so urgent, that whenever he took his mightiest men from his army, had them bind up, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and throw them in, when they fell in, the men who threw them in died. That's how hot the fire was. There's no denying that this fire was fatal. But when Nebuchadnezzar is astonished, he arises and he goes to the mouth of the furnace and he looks in. He said, did not we throw in three men bound? And they say, true, O king. He said, lo, I see four loosed and walking around. And the form of the fourth is likened to the Son of God. Now here Nebuchadnezzar is saying something different than he said before. Before he said the Lord was a Lord of kings, a God of gods, a revealer of secrets. But now he's saying, I see the form of the very Son of God. By the way, just as a little side note, you check some modern perversions of the Bible, they've changed that verse. It does not say the form of the fourth is likened to the Son of God. It says the form of the fourth is likened to a son of the gods. Big difference. But he says, I see the form of the fourth is likened to the Son of God. And then he commands Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah to come out. And when he commands them to come out, everything seems to be looking up. He's now gone from being an idolater to admitting he's seen the Son of God. And what does he say? In Daniel chapter 3, he says, starting in verse 26, Daniel 3 and 26, Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire, and the princes, governors, and captains of the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and hath delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Here Nebuchadnezzar is blessed with further understanding. He not only has secrets revealed unto him by God, he's not only made aware of the existence of God, he's made aware and has seen the form of the Son of God. He's seen the very power of God in the face of life's dangers. And I tell you, what he saw was just amazing. You ever stood, not even next to a fire? I mean, last night we saw a fireworks show, and when the fireworks were way over there, we were getting rained on by debris. When we were done, the smoke was all around us, and the fireworks were way over there. And by the time I got in the car and got ready to come home, I still smelled like smoke. I still smelled like fireworks. Folks, they were inside a fire, and when they came out, not only was nothing burned or singed on them, they didn't even smell like they'd been in a fire. This is a great miraculous power of God. But what does Nebuchadnezzar say? He says, I'm making a commandment that people cannot speak evil against this God because of what? No other God can deliver after this sort. What's his problem? He still thinks there's other gods out there. He's gone from saying, your God is a God of gods, your Lord is a Lord of kings, your Lord is a revealer of secrets, and now he's saying, your God's the strongest. He doesn't just exist, but he's the strongest. But there's still other gods out there. You say, what are you driving at, preacher? How many times in our lives do we admit in God? Do we say we believe in God? And we'll even say that God is the strongest, most powerful being in all this universe. But we still follow after other things. We still follow after other things, even though we'll say, well, they're not as strong as God is. You say, what are you talking about? Well, let's look at what's been removed from Nebuchadnezzar. You know, Nebuchadnezzar is a king. He's sovereign. He has power. He has authority. The first thing that was removed from him in Daniel chapter 2 was what he thought about the wisdom of his empire. All of his wise men were made to look like fools. All of his magicians were made to look like idiots. All of his wisdom of his kingdom was taken away. In this chapter, all of his power is taken away. Because his strongest threat that he could offer, God just disannuls. God just wipes it away. So his wisdom is taken away. His power is taken away. There's nothing left, is there? Is there anything left for God to take away from this man? He's taken away the wisdom. He's taken away the power. What else could he take away? Well, friends, whenever our wisdom, whenever our power, whenever our strength has begun to fail, whenever our bodies do not do what they used to do, whenever our minds aren't as sharp as they once were, does that mean we lose any bit of our pride? I realize I'm not an old man, but you know, my body's older than it used to be. My mind's not as sharp as it once was. Yes, I'm stupider now than I was before, and I'm weaker now than I used to be. But you know, I haven't lost one iota of my pride. Have you? I hadn't lost one shred of my own ego. Have you? We keep it to the day we die. I remember when I was a lot younger, my natural father was preaching, And he made a statement. Dad at the time was probably only about 35. And sitting in the front row was an elder out in California named Elder D.A. Lane. At this time, the man was about 88 years old. He lived to be about 97, I believe, before he passed away. And Dad made the comment that he so enjoyed being around people like Brother D.A. And he said, the reason I enjoy being around people like that is because they're older, they're wiser, and they've learned to have better control over their sins, and their sins don't bother them like they used to. And Brother D.A. piped up and said, ain't happening over here. And that just shocked Dad, because he saw in Brother D.A. a very wise, a very astute, a very godly man who seemed to be in control over his sinful passions. And that man said, doesn't matter how old you get, they're still with you. They still bother you. Friends, Nebuchadnezzar could have all of his wisdom brought to naught. He could have all his power brought to naught, but there's still something else left to be shown unto him, that he as a man means absolutely nothing in the sight of God whenever God moves and God acts. Amen. Go to Daniel chapter 4. In Daniel chapter 4, we have God even prophesying to this man what is going to happen. He gives him a dream. Daniel comes in and reveals the dream. And in the dream, Nebuchadnezzar beholds a tree that grows up, that's very strong, very powerful, that all the people of the earth, or the fowls of the heaven, come to get shade under this tree. And he beholds as this tree is cut down. And he watches as seven times pass over this stump, as it's watered with the dew from heaven. And it says, until seven times passed over. And it says, the voice came from heaven saying, so shall it be unto thee. And then Daniel comes, and Daniel reveals a dream. He says, thou art this tree, O king, and thou shalt be cut down, and thou shalt be driven from among men. He says, and now, he encourages him to repent. He encourages him to take heed. He encourages him to beware of what is being prophesied. Well, probably for a time, Nebuchadnezzar did. But after 12 months, he's walking through his kingdom. He's walking through his palace. And he looks around and he says, is not this great Babylon, which I have built, which I have created? He still has pride. God has shown him his son. God has shown him his power. God has shown him his wisdom. And he still says, look at what I have done. Look at who I am. And a voice comes from heaven and says, so shall it be unto thee. And he is cut down. He's driven from among men. He becomes a hideous beast. He has feathers growing on his back. He has claws for his fingers. He has grass that he eats for his food. And he sits out away from men, eating grass of the field like an ox, having feathers like a bird and claws like an eagle for seven times. For 7 years, this mighty king is struck down to absolute humility. And at the end of 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar speaks again about God. Here's what he says. In verse 33, Daniel 4 and verse 33, the same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored Him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And He doeth according to His will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay His hand or say unto Him, what doest thou? At the same time, my reason returned unto me. And for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. What has been found in Nebuchadnezzar's former speech is absent from this one. He does not admit of any other God. He does not admit of any other deity. He does not admit of any other power. All he admits on this occasion is one God, the King of heaven, one God who has an everlasting kingdom, one God who is from generation to generation to generation, always the same, and one God who is sovereign and able to say whatever he pleases, whatever he does, and nobody can say, what doest thou? Friends, that's the God we ought to serve. That's the God we ought to honor. That's the God we ought to extol, because He says, whosoever is filled with pride, He is able to abase. Friends, our gods in this world may not be gods of idols or gods of gold. They may not be idols of silver. They may not be images that we fall down and worship. But friends, if I study my life, if I study my days here on earth, my life is filled with idolatry. The idolatry that I have are the idols that I have erected for myself. Idols that I fall down and worship. Oh, I may say, oh, God is the strongest of all the gods. But I still pay homage to the God of fear. I still pay homage to the God of sorrow. I still pay homage to the God of anxiety. I still pay homage to the God of depression. I still pay homage to the God of anger and fury and malice and rage. Friends, all of these things, when they control our lives, they're idols of our own choosing. They're gods of our own pleasure. Friends, He is able to abase all these things. I've asked this question before, but it's worth asking again. Do any of you have any doubt? Do you have any worry? Do you have any fear about where you'll spend eternity? Are you worried about that at all? Are you afraid of what might happen after death? I don't think any of us are. Are you worried that somehow Christ's blood was not good enough? Are you worried that somehow God might change His mind? I don't think any of us are. How many of you have worried about tomorrow? How many of you have worried about next week? How many of you have worried about the next fiscal quarter? How many of you have worried about what are we going to do to pay our taxes? How many of you have worried or in fear of what might happen in the future? Friends, if He's able to take care of eternity, what's too hard for Him here? If He's able to take care of eternal matters, and His work that His Son Jesus Christ performed is the greatest, most difficult work this world has ever seen, what in our life is too difficult for Him? What in our life is worth being afraid of? What in our life is worth being angry about? What in our life is worth being just so uprooted about that that's all we can think about? Friends, when it comes to this life, He is not just able to deliver into eternity. When it comes to this life, there is nothing happens here in this world that can say unto Him, what doest thou? You may say, does that mean He's responsible for all that we see? Heavens, no. But friends, we should trust Him and honor Him and extol Him and understand that whatever happens in this world, it is not too difficult, too strong for our Lord to take care of. And He is able to abase us when we walk in pride. Now let's notice some things that Nebuchadnezzar says that I think are very important when it comes to the sovereignty of God. One thing that he says is, he said, at the end of these days, he says, my understanding returned unto me. Notice he didn't say my understanding was given. He says it returned. You know, something returned, that means you once had it. Or it means if you go somewhere and you return, you've been there before. What Nebuchadnezzar is telling us is, for a time, I lost some things that I once knew. Friends, whenever he shows us that the wisdom of this world is foolishness, whenever he shows us that the power of this world is nothing in his sight, and we still walk in pride, he is able to remove from us the knowledge of that blessing, the knowledge of that power. Notice what he says in 2 Peter 1, in about verse 8 and 9. In 2 Peter 1, after Peter has told us to add into our faith these seven things, he says, for if these things be in you and abound, they make you that you should neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. But if any man lack these things, in other words, if we lack the things that make for humility, if we are lacking things because of our pride, if we're lacking virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, and so on and so forth, if we lack these things, if any man lack these things, he's blind and cannot see afar off, and hath forgotten that he's been purged from his old sins. Friends, it is possible for us, if we deny the sovereignty of God, if we deny His power, if we deny His authority, and try to walk in our own ways, it is possible for our understanding to leave us. It is possible for us to lose sight of the Son of God. What had Nebuchadnezzar seen in chapter 3? He had seen the very form of the Son of God. What have we seen in our lives? We've seen the very form of the Son of God. Paul says that in the preaching of the gospel, Christ is evidently set before us, crucified among us. Friends, whenever the gospel goes forth, do you see your Lord high and lifted up? Do you see Jesus Christ crucified before you? Do you see the one who paid your sin debt? I trust that we all do. Because that's what preaching is supposed to do. The preaching of the cross is supposed to set forth Jesus Christ evidently crucified among us. But friends, I can lose sight of what I once saw. Nebuchadnezzar lost his understanding. It had left him. And the end of 7 days returned unto him. Or 7 times returned unto him. Friends, I don't ever want to lose sight of an understanding of the Son of God and what He's done for us. Notice what else he says. After he says that his understanding returned, after he said that the Lord doeth whatever He will among the army in heaven and the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay His hand or say, "What doest thou?" What else does he say? This is something that I think ought to be promoted every day from the highest rooftops in this world. He says, "And my reason returned unto me." You know what he just said? He says it is a reasonable thing to believe in the sovereignty of God. What do we mean when we say something's reasonable? Whenever my parents told me to do something and I sort of got my back up and said, "I just don't think I want to do it." One of Dad's favorite expressions was, "Is what I gave you to do reasonable?" In other words, was what I gave you unfair or was it fair? Was what I gave you something you were able to do or not able to do? And I would always have to grit my teeth and say it was reasonable. I didn't like saying that. I would rather tell them, "Well, no, it's unfair. You're expecting me to do something I can't do." But every time I had to say, "Yes, that's reasonable." Friends, when it comes to the belief of God that the Bible teaches, is it reasonable? Is it fair? Is it equitable? Does it make sense? Let's put it in this perspective. Some of the smartest people in the world in natural things deny the existence of God. And some of the fields they study, it's amazing to me that they could. Whenever you take astronomers and people who stare at the heavens, I don't see how anybody can look at that and not see that that's just a testimony of the creation of God. A testimony of the divine creator who just put all this into existence. But let's think about it this way. There was a map that the Royal Science Academy came up with some 10 or 12 years ago. And in this map, for them to get everything on a linear scale, for them to go out as far as they knew from either side of the universe, the map had to be 100 feet long just to get the scope of the universe in one linear thing. It's 100 feet long this way. Now, do you know how far on that map the distance was from the Earth to Mars? It was less than an inch. Earth to Mars was less than an inch long. You know how long it took a spaceship built by a man to go from Earth to Mars? 1 year. It took us, in a spaceship we created, 1 year to go from Earth to Mars, and that's less than an inch, on a map of a universe that's at least 100 feet long, and that's just what we know about. You say, "What's your point?" My point is this. If Earth to Mars is this far, how big is the Earth on that map? I'll just go ahead and tell you, on the map, with the naked eye, you can't see the Earth. It takes a magnifying glass to see it. How big are we on the Earth? Almost nothing. I wouldn't want to know what size of microscope you'd have to see us on the map, on the Earth, in that spot. All the inhabitants are reputed as nothing before Him. Friends, it is unreasonable to think that we small, little, insignificant specks on this map that is not even on the same scale as the universe that we see could say, "God, You must do what I say do. God, You must go where I say go." It is an unreasonable thing. It is a reasonable thing that the very God who created this universe that's bigger than we can comprehend can say, "I'll do what I want. I'll do what I please. If I say this is the way it is, that's the way it is." Friends, that's reasonable. He created it. He's greater than all of this. He's certainly greater than we are. It is reasonable that we should say, "God, I don't know what You know. and you can do what you please. It is reasonable for us to say, God, because I don't know what you know, I'll do what you would have me to do. And friends, what would He have us to do? What He would have us to do is to honor Him, Him, and Him alone. Honor Him not for what we want Him to be, but honor Him for who He is. Not what we think He is, but who He really is. Now, who is He really? Who is He really? Nebuchadnezzar says He is the King over all the earth. He's the only one. That means that He can be worshipped properly alone. He cannot be worshipped with anything else. And friends, part of worshipping Him is not just in what we say. Part of worshipping Him is in what we do. I'll close in Psalm 115. I tried to touch on this some last Sunday morning at Pleasant Plains. But in Psalm 115, we read a glorious declaration of God's sovereignty in verse 3. The psalmist says, "But our God is in the heavens, and He hath done whatsoever He hath pleased." Then he goes on in the next four verses to say, "Their gods are idols of silver and gold, the working of men's hands. They have eyes, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses that do not smell. Mouths that do not speak. Hands that do not handle. And feet that do not walk. All the other gods in this world have no power. They may have body parts, but they have no power. They can't do anything." But what does it say in verse 8 of Psalm 115? Verse 8 says this, "They that make them are like unto them. So is every one that trusteth in them." Friends, Nebuchadnezzar was made to see in his life that I am powerless. I am just as powerless as the gods that I serve. I am just as weak and just as insignificant as the gods that I honor. But if we honor the God of heaven, if we do what He would have us do, what does that say? That says that we have power to exercise. No, friends, we're not sovereign. We never will be. But you know what? The sovereign has given us power that comes from Him. He's given us power to go forward in life defeating the idols of this world. You may have a God of fear. You may have a God of anger. You may have a God of disappointment. You may have a God of sorrow. You may have a God of anxiety. You may have a God of anything else you want to name. Any of the problems that you face in life. Friends, He's bigger than all those things. He's greater than all those things. And He's given us the power to overcome all those things. Because our God has eyes that always see. He has ears that are always attentive to our cries. He has a mouth that speaks gracious words. He has a nose that is able to smell the odors of our prayers as they go and they waft up into the heavenly throne room. He has hands that handle, that He's able to wrap us up in His arms of mercy and compassion. And He has feet that are swift to come and save us out of our problems. Friends, the God we serve has power. He has body parts that can be exercised, and when we follow after Him, we are like unto Him. Which means that we exercise the power that He's given unto us. I said before that Nebuchadnezzar had an extraordinary experience. Friends, I don't ever expect any of us, although God is able to, I don't expect any of us to ever have feathers on our back, claws on our hands, be eating grass like an ox. But friends, I want us to never be so humiliated, so abased in our life because we fail to honor the King. Never fail to lose sight of what He's given unto us and always admit the reasonableness and the truthfulness of the sovereignty of God, honoring Him for what He's done for us. If these things have been a blessing, you give Him all the praise, honor, and glory. If I've offended this day, you lay that to my charge. May the Lord richly bless you, is my prayer.